Follow Ed Milet on Twitter, YouTube, and at edmilet.com.
Welcome back to Max Out. I'm Ed Milet. This gentleman to my right needs no introduction. 39-0, 30 KOs. Never even had a close fight. We were just talking about off camera, right? Champion in four different weight classes. And that's not even my favorite part about his story. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about what an immigrant family looks like tonight. We're going to talk about winning, a champion's mindset. And there's really no better dude on the planet to do that with than Mikey Garcia. So, hey. Mikey, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation. I'm happy to be here. Pleasure to meet you. And I'm looking forward to, you know, having this relationship going on.
Me too.
Just, I'm very happy.
Me too, man. It's been a good connection so far
Thank you.
So, there's a lot to cover here today, you guys. This is what you're looking at to my right. Is the face of a great American success story, Mexican-American success story. And I try to always bring people on the program that can give you different viewpoints of winning, of maxing out. And you bring one that I'm really passionate about because it involves even my own family. As you know, my wife is also partially Latina. And so I wanted to put a face on success. I wanted to put a face on what an immigrant family looks like today, too. And so this is a boxer, but this is a successful man. So we're going to talk about that first. But I want to go back to when you were a kid a little bit.
Sure.
So I think it's interesting. I was reading, you just have to put this in context, guys. 39-0, this is undefeated. And really, no fight's been very close, right? It's not even been close. But you didn't really, like, love boxing when you were a kid. Like, I'm reading, your brother says you would cry when you would get to the gym. Is that really true?
It's true. Look, I grew up in a boxing family.
Yep.
Both my older brothers boxed. My oldest brother, Danny, he was a professional fighter. My brother, Robert, was still in the amateurs, about to transition to a professional. I was about 5 years old, 6 years old.
Yeah.
I'd go to the gym with them, but I didn't like it. I never wanted to be at the gym. It was boring for me. I just wanted to be home and play video games, play Super Nintendo, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't really like it. I never saw myself as a boxer. I never saw myself training. I never pictured myself doing any of that. That was something that my older brothers were doing, and that's their life, not me.
Are you the baby?
I'm the youngest in the family.
Okay.
We're seven total. Family
of
seven.
Okay.
Four women, three men.
Okay.
But again, I never saw myself as a boxer.
Why? Like, did you not like the violence part of it, or did you?
I didn't like anything of it.
Honestly. Even your face, you could see.
I didn't care for it. I didn't like it. I hated going to the gym.
Wow.
It was boring. I didn't like the what I seen with Robert and my brother Danny. You know, I saw them at the gym every day.
Yeah.
Sweating, hitting the bag, working hard.
Yeah.
I thought that was just too much work. I didn't care for that.
I think it's kind of a good lesson for everybody, though, brother. Like, I think the first pass you make at your business or something you can be successful at, just because you don't love it initially, doesn't mean it's not part of your destiny. Doesn't mean you can't be, obviously, you're successful because you've worked your ass off, but also there's some natural giftedness there, too, right?
Yes, there is. There has to be.
There has to be. And so, you know, sometimes the things you see first, you may not love them right away, but it may be where your gift is. It may end up being where your passion is down the road. So did it change at some point? When did it click where you're like, okay, I think I want to box?
So I'm 13 years old.
Okay.
And I go to Reseda to visit a nephew. He was a couple years younger than me, about 2 years younger than me. He had an amateur contest that day, that evening.
Okay.
He actually started to go to the gym and train out there in Reseda. So we go to support him. One of the kids from the opposite gym didn't have an opponent. And my brother, Robert, just signed me up, says, here, you're getting in the ring today.
Oh my gosh.
And I was not training. I had never been in the gym to train. But we knew enough just to get by. We fool around at the house with boxing gloves. My nephews, my friends, or whatever, you know, we borrowed my brother's gloves before that. So we knew boxing, but I was never training to compete. That day, my brother just signed me up, says, here, you're getting in the ring.
Oh my God.
Now, I didn't have a license. I had never registered as an amateur fighter. So the commission wouldn't allow me to fight. So they made an exhibition.
Okay.
They made it like a sparring session.
Okay.
So I borrowed shoes, gloves, headgear, the whole thing. And we get in the ring. And again, I was 13 years old. I get in the ring and we do a 3-round exhibition match. That's what started for me. I fell in love with the competition.
There you go.
I fell in love with winning, with trying to win, with showing that one person in front of me that I'm a better fighter, that I'm better than he is. that's what I really, really kind of, you know, got hooked on.
I was telling you off camera, too. I find that often that, like, even I interviewed Zach Johnson. He was telling me that he didn't love golf. He loves winning. He loves competing, and that's something he's good at. So it literally, just picture this, you guys. Sitting to my right is one of the greatest fighters in the world right now. Probably is going to end up being, I think you're going to pass Floyd. You're going to go past 50-0, right? And you're talking about one of the greatest fighters in the world, and he does not even love the sport when he starts. But some, but it's what happens in our life. Like a random event happens, and you like take advantage of it. So your family's interesting to me because you've referenced your brother already and your dad. Your dad's got a great name, Eduardo, which is obviously my name. But I want to keep boxing in there, but I also, we're going to get to all this domination here in a minute. I think it's fascinating that a guy that doesn't love the sport in the beginning, some random event, ends up, you know, becoming 39-0 at this time and in his prime. But your family, to me, is what America's all about and needs to be more about. And this version of an immigrant family needs to be featured more often. And so when we talk about this part of it, I don't care what side of this debate you're on or any of that other stuff. I just want you to hear this story because I think it will inspire you. Your mom and dad are like the real heroes of your family. Yeah. And I respect you a whole bunch, but the more I read about your father and your mom, I actually even get emotional about the sacrifices, I think, just reading about them that they made for you. So tell me a little bit about your dad first, Eduardo, and tell everybody about what he did to come to this country, the work he put in, the backbreaking work he did, even to give an opportunity for someone like you to be a champion.
I enjoy and I love sharing my father's story, my mom's story. Because just like you mentioned, I think it can inspire anybody who listens to it, who hears it. It might motivate someone to, you know, do better and do great in life. I consider my mom, my dad, you know, the American dream, you know, in reality and in life, you know.
Yeah.
My father had a third grade education in Mexico. My mom had a sixth grade education in Mexico. Married very young, started having a family in Mexico. We're from the state of Michoacan. They moved around different towns trying to make a living. My dad would make the trips out here to the States illegally at first. Had different lines of work. He worked close by out here in San Pedro at a fish cannery marketplace. He worked the fields also. All North California, Southern California. He had different types of work, but he always had a dream and aspired to do something more than just that. He had a family to raise. He wanted a better life for the family than what Mexico could offer. He came out here legally now. When the Bracero program, the last year of the Bracero program was available, he made the trip out here. He turned 18 here in Rancho Cucamonga. As he was working. He was working tomato fields. He was working just different you know, type of work. And that was when I think it was Reagan who had the amnesty. And then because he was here and he was able to get my rest of my older brothers and sisters, you know, their papers to come to the States legally.
Yep.
So he landed here, and they're living in Long Beach, Wilmington. Like I said, he was working the fish cannery business there, and he always loved boxing. He had always loved boxing. He never had the opportunity to box himself because he was married young, had to raise a family. The support wasn't there. Financially, they couldn't afford it. But once he was here, he would go to the boxing gyms and take my older brother Danny with him and, you know, just watch the gym, watch the fighters. He started training my brother and just get him in the sport, just to do something. But it was still, you know, they're very poor still. They're barely making, you know, making by, living in one-bedroom apartments, that kind of stuff. Fish cannery, business goes out of business, shuts down. They relocate to Oxnard. My older brothers are boxing a little bit. He goes and starts working strawberry fields. You know, they're out in the day in the sun from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 12-hour day.
It's backbreaking work.
Backbreaking work.
Yep.
My brother Robert started fighting, and my dad would take him early in the mornings to run at the beach or at the mountains before having to head out to work. Then after work, he would send my mom home so she could go and be, you know, at home with the family and the kids while he went to open up the gym. He would have to open up the boxing gym. He had that dream. He wanted, you know, boxing. So he opened the gym, started working. It was a city-run gym. He had a few fighters, started running the amateur program. My brother was there. Kid comes by, name of Fernando Vargas.
Yeah.
First day at the gym, gets in the ring, doesn't know anything. Mm. My brother, my dad, they start training, start working. You know, he just wanted boxing. He loved boxing so much. And he did this for nearly 20 years.
Unbelievable.
Of doing the field work, picking strawberries. My mom was picking strawberries along with my dad.
Are you guys hearing this? Are you hearing this? So this man comes here, has all these different setbacks. If you've ever driven by a strawberry field, it is back-breaking work. I remember as a kid, I don't know why this makes me so emotional. I remember driving with my dad to a baseball tournament. And I was telling my dad how hard he worked. Yeah. And I wanted to work like him someday. No joke. We drive right by the strawberry fields. And my dad pointed out there and he goes, That's hard work. 100 degrees in the summertime. And his mother's out there with his father doing this.
Listen to this.
Okay.
My mom was pregnant of me, still working in the strawberry fields, until she was 6 months pregnant.
Oh my gosh, man. This is
unreal. She was 6 months pregnant of me while she was still working.
Oh my God. How bad do you want your dream to happen? His dad would do this all day. His mother would do this all day. Then he'd go open the gym. And what your dad did that happens in all businesses, then the one dude walks in, and it's Vargas.
Yeah, Vargas.
Someone walks in that's special, right? You don't know it at the time.
They don't know it.
But they're special, and that's when things click. It's like it's almost like when this preparation meets this moment, right? Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh, something's going to happen now. And then this starts to leave, so continue.
It's a crazy story. Vargas walks in the gym. Two other kids walk in the gym around the same week. Mm. My dad was there with two other coaches. And my dad would kind of try to work with the other coaches, but there was always like that competition. Who's a better trainer? Who does better? So my dad brought up a challenge to the other coaches and asked them, look, these three kids just walked in recently. You know, you guys all seen them in the ring. Neither of them shows anything, you know, experience yet. So why don't you guys pick a fighter? We'll train that kid for 1 month, and at the end of the month, we'll put them to spar and see who's progressing more. So seeing them had already spar, everybody picked the other two and left my dad with Vargas.
For Fernando.
They didn't pick Fernando.
He wasn't the guy you'd pick.
They didn't pick him. So my dad says, okay, I'll take whoever you guys leave me.
Wow.
So they left Fernando. My dad trained him. Sure enough, within a month, Fernando's starting to, you know,
that's crazy. Because I've made a little bit in my own life like you have, I get emotional about it because I picture your dad. I know what it's like to get up in the morning and how sore his body must have just been. Just physically sore.
Yeah.
And then to get up and your mother 6 months pregnant with you, right?
Yeah.
They go, and he's in there. I could just picture this man just for his family just doing the work he needs to do to feed them. And he's got this dream in the back of his mind. There's no one giving your dad motivational pep talks.
No.
There's no Instagram.
Nope.
There's no think and grow rich.
None.
There's just a dude with a fucking dream that he wants to make something happen. And he just worked,
He just worked.
And then to think he leaves there, sends your mom home. And I can just picture him with the keys open the door. It's quiet in there. There's no one there. There's no reason to think any of this is going to work.
No.
And then, so Vargas ends up, I guess, beating these other two kids and becomes...
to, you know, progress and starts winning fights and tournaments and along with my brother and the gym started to really grow and Fernando ended up, you know, making the Olympic team, representing the U.S. in 96. Mm. My dad also had another fighter, Carlos Martinez, represent Mexico same year. You know, it started to really show, you know, potential, started to show signs that there's something here, we could do something. But prior to that,
nothing.
It was nothing. I mean, we grew up, I was born still in the one-bedroom trailer, a mobile park trailer, with all my brothers and sisters in a one-bedroom trailer.
Is that right?
No one else there, like you said, to tell my dad
something's
going to come by or it's going to go well for you, this is going to work or you need this, nothing. It was just his dedication, his just strive, you know, his hunger, that's what got him.
I'll probably never, after that story, honestly, I'll probably never picture, I'll be at the next fight, but I don't think I'll ever picture you walking into a full arena the same way. I'll be thinking about your dad. You know what I mean? Like, just to think that this man, you're born into a one-bedroom trailer with seven kids there, and they're just, you just drive by the freeway, and they're just one of these people that are here working that you don't know. They're kind of, and that turns into this son who fills up arenas. And by the way, when you hear these stories, too, it's like, whatever your view is on immigration, do you understand, like just Mike alone, the difference he makes in just the economy, just alone, like the ripple effects of what your dad did with the going to that gym and having the vision to start it. And like, dude, like he fills up arenas. There's the HBO pay-per-views that have happened. There's the, not anymore, but there's
Showtime,
right? There's Showtime. There's the concession people. There's the stands. There's the ticket sales. There's all the memories. There's like all these people who have profited and benefited because your dad made his dream happen. You can't even picture the ripple when your dream happens.
Most people don't ever think about that kind of stuff, just like you mentioned. Mm. Most people don't hear or don't see it. Mm. I and my family, I see that.
Yeah.
And that's why we appreciate my dad. And people that know my dad appreciate him and can really, you know, see how great of a man he is for what he did, for what he's done. My brother right now with his gym, his fighters, you know, all the champions that he's created and everything. But it all started going back to my dad.
With your dad and your mom, by the way. You picture your dream, you guys. And just like, what would you be willing to sacrifice? Maybe, I mean, you're waiting for the next motivational interview, the next Instagram thing, the next meme. His dad just worked. And then his mother. I mean, think about this. Those of you that have spouses, you're chasing your dream right now, and your spouse is giving you a hard time. You imagine his mother? Yeah. Wait a minute. I just spent 15 or 20 years in the fields picking strawberries. You're there. Can you please come home and help me with the kids? You know, like she could have done anything to steal your dad's dream, right? And your mother's still supportive. And to think it turns into your brother, just so you know, his brother Robert, arguably the greatest trainer in the world right now, right? He's one of two. You know, most people would say your brother. So he's got these sons that have done these unbelievable things. So I want people to see that face on it. And what would you tell somebody, I'm just curious, who doesn't know what to make of families who come here that have immigrated here? They just, you know, they're watching this and they don't. I grew up in Southern California, so I know how hardworking immigrant families are. I know that they're not all, I know that these are not criminals coming across all the time and all this other stuff you hear. Of course, there's some that live here also permanently, right? So what would you say? This to me, and by the way, the children haven't all turned out the same, but like about every immigrant family I know has this work ethic. Like, what would you tell people who aren't familiar, don't know, right? They just don't know.
Most people won't know because they never seen it firsthand. They never seen the kind of work or the culture behind these families that make the sacrifice to leave their homes in other countries and in search of a better life. Mm-hmm. They haven't had the time spent with those families, or they just have no idea really what it is to do that. But when you really put in perspective like that, picture us going from the States here to a foreign country with no knowledge of the cultures or the language or, you know, all these barriers in search of a better life, you know? I mean, that's the only thing that you can really ask them to do, but they still won't be able to, you know, grasp what it really takes. Yeah. But a family that makes the trip to come here to the States, a good family to work, you know, to do better for their families, to get a higher education for the kids, you know, if they understand that and they come here in search of these things, you know, they're in search of the American dream. That's what the American dream is, you know, a better life than what you had, you know, before. Yeah. And some, like I said, some families or people don't really understand what it is.
Yep.
But just think about it. How bad it had to be at your previous home to leave your home where you were born and bring your entire family, you know, to a whole new place in search of something better.
Yep.
Just because you've heard that there's opportunities, because you've heard that there's an opportunity, there's hope that you can do better here in the States than where you were.
Yep.
And that's the only thing.
That's all I want people to hear, because we're going to talk boxing in a minute too. I wanted people to hear about how special your mom and dad were, because it's obvious how special you are. And we're not here to change an opinion about a political issue. That's not why I'm here. I'm here to just have you hear the story. And then maybe you'll just make your own conclusions. Maybe you'll begin to see things a little bit differently. Because, you know, I know people like your father who didn't make a big dream come true, but I know their sons fought in our military.
Yes, yes.
And so I'm just very passionate about people just understanding how good these families are that have come here, that have made these dreams happen. And your father's a hero. Your father, to me, is he's beyond what the American dream's about. Your father and your mother, what they've created with your family, is so inspiring to me. And it's one thing for someone to be able to say motivational words. It's another thing for just their story is inspiring. And your dad's just, your mom and dad are amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Well, like I said, I like sharing my dad's story because I think people can relate to the struggles. People can relate to overcoming, you know, obstacles in life in general. My dad has found success through boxing, through you know, but it takes the hard work, the dedication, the discipline, that strive, you know, it takes that to finally accomplish that.
On the other side, way more, these are all the lessons of winning, right? Like, I'm curious, so we'll talk about your struggles too. We're gonna go into boxing a little bit too. When did you know you were good? Like, when did you go, oh, I'm gonna make a living at this, or I might be a world champion?
I was just like I said, my first amateur experience, you know, that
you knew you loved it, but did you know you were good then?
I didn't know I was good.
Yeah.
But I got hooked on the competition.
Yep.
I'm very competitive. Mm-hmm. I wanted to win. Mm-hmm. That fight was not a win or lose. It was an exhibition.
Yeah.
There was no winner. But I wanted to win. I just wanted to show everybody I'm a better fighter. So I started to train. I had my first official amateur experience of fight in February, which means I was 14 now. Mm-hmm. So I trained about 6 months before my first fight. Then I went on 1 year. 9 fights, 10 fights, somewhere in 1 year as an amateur. Okay. Different shows, different level of experience, but all the kids that I fought that year had maybe no more than 12 fights or less. I entered my first tournament. It was a junior Olympic tournament. It's a national tournament. I had 9 fights going to a tournament, 10 fights going to a tournament. I make it all the way to the national level, the very final round. I had beat guys that were 40 fights in, 80 fights in, and I'm only going in the tournament with 10 fights. But making it that, you know, far in the tournament to the very, very final, I ended up losing on a 3-2 split decision against Michael Concepcion from New Jersey. I still remember kid's name.
Yeah, I can say, I don't know him.
it was a close fight. I thought I won. That was my first loss. That was my first loss as an amateur. It was like my 16th fight. But I just realizing that I made it this far against kids with so much experience, kids who have been doing it for a few years now.
Yeah.
Kids normally start at 8-10 years old.
Yeah.
I'm starting late at 14, and in 1 year of boxing, I make it to the final in junior Olympic tournament, national level. Like, okay, there's something here. I could do something here.
Is your dad or your brother the type to tell you you're good, or they reserve praise and recognition?
They'll tell me.
They are.
Well, at least at that time, they told me. Like, hey, look, you've done this much. You know, at least maybe to try to cheer me up because I lost. Yeah. Like, hey, you did well, you did this, you're here, you know. That's reassuring.
Okay.
But once they started seeing me develop more and more and win other tournaments and compete in higher level tournaments, beat the number one, number two, number three, number five and six in the national team, I beat them. And it's like, if I'm already beating the number one fighter in the nation, I mean, I must be pretty good.
Pretty good.
I mean, I have won the tournament, but I beat the guy who was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it just tells you, you know, there's something here.
Yeah.
Then we started turning pro. Again, I didn't know where we were going to go. So just fight at a time, one by one, just to see where we develop. There was attention from promoters, managers before that. And so I figured, okay, we can do something, but we just don't know how far we can go.
And did you dream it would go this far?
No, I never thought I'd be here. I never thought I'd be doing it this far or competing at this level, being where I'm at. When I first fought for the first world title against Orlando Salido, I was at a featherweight title fight 2013. I saw myself being champion at 126 for some time, then 130, and possibly a 135 pound.
Yeah.
I figured 3 divisions is probably enough.
Yeah.
But I probably would be campaigning at featherweight and super featherweight most. And I only fought that one time at featherweight because then the next fight, I fought Lopez. Then I move up to 130 and then 135 and now I'm 140. Now I'm thinking maybe 147. So I never imagined I'd be where I'm at.
It's unreal, man. Like couple lessons there I just want to point out. Like, one, almost everybody I've interviewed on this show, including myself, one of our traits is we're crazy competitive. Yeah. Like, it almost overrides whether you even love what you're doing. You're like, I have to just win. Yep. Like, I may not even like all of the training, but I have to win.
Well, like, I don't like the training either.
Right? See, isn't that interesting? There's a couple dudes, I think you'd agree, they kind of like training. They're freaks, right? Yeah, but, like, yeah. Most people don't. Yeah. Most people don't like making phone calls in business or eating broiled chicken in the gym or, you know, or doing the training. Like, they don't like that stuff, right? So it's a fact. But they love to win. They love to compete. That overrides it. The hard work part, obviously, too. But also, I never saw myself here. Yeah. But what happens is, I think it's almost like the fights. Like, you kind of step up in class. You're like, okay, I can handle this. I can see the next class.
Exactly.
Is that how it was for you?
That's how it was. Because we're developing as a fighter. The first couple of fights, they're really putting in guys just to build your record, build your confidence, let you develop, you know, going from 4 rounds to 6 rounds to 8 rounds. Then they step up competition of opponents to test you a little bit, test you. Maybe you test your will, maybe test your power. Mm-hmm. They put someone that can hold, you know, who's holding their own against top guys or who has gone the distance for world title fights. But those are tests that challenge me and motivate me to do better and do great. And once I complete that, all right, what's next? I want something better. I want something bigger. Yeah. I want a bigger challenge.
Yeah.
And once we landed the world title fights, now I just wanted bigger tests, bigger fighters, you know, every single time. That's why I've been moving up in weight class. That's why I'm challenging myself against bigger men every single time, against better opponents every single time.
Yeah,
just the way it is.
We're going to talk about some of those opponents. We're going to get some of the boxing stuff in a second. Like, but I do really believe it reveals itself to you as you go. You got to get to the next step and the next step and the next step. One interesting thing about you that surprised me is that I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I would consider your style not flashy. And I mean that with respect. No, to me, you're just this fundamentally very sound fighter. Would you agree with that? Because the reason I say that is there's different ways to win. There are people that just mega, I don't know, they're Lomachenko's angles or footwork in boxing, for example, or someone's just got like incredible motivational skills in business. There's those. But most people win because at whatever they do, they're fundamentally great at it, right? Like their fundamentals are strong. Is that true of your style, or what would you
say? I agree with that, and I can add a little bit.
Okay.
See, I'm not flashy in the sense that I don't have anything really that stands out as far as, like, you mentioned footwork or the speed. Mm-hmm. None of that really stands out from everybody else. I don't have the flashiest, fastest hands, crazy combinations. I don't have that. I don't have the craziest angles and footwork. I don't have the craziest power where Mike Tyson one punch knockout every first round every single time. I don't have that. But I think it's the subtle things that make me a better fighter. You know, power is there, speed is there, you know, footwork is there when it has to be.
Yeah.
The timing is there. I have the ability to read my opponent, read, you know, body language, read their eyes. Listen to their breathing, even, you know, the breathing tells me, you know, just a lot of things that someone else doesn't do. I have that, and that puts a package together that allows me to just be just a little bit better than my opponent every single time.
Oh my God, I love that. You know, I love that.
The training that I go, everybody has training camps. Everybody does 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever, but they don't all do the same things that I do.
Such as
visualization is a big part of my training. I visualize my fights. I don't even see a lot of film on my opponents. Like my last fight, I fought Robert Easter. I seen him fight against Fortuna when the fight actually happened earlier in the year. But then I never saw another
You film. Watched no film on
no
him?
No film on him.
Wow.
What I do instead is I think about the fight in my head. I visualize every minute of every round for 12 rounds, different scenarios. Every time, I always win.
Yeah, in your visualization.
In my visualization, I'm always winning. I visualize him hurting me. I visualize me going to the ground. I visualize, you know, getting injured. I visualize a lot of different scenarios that could play out in a fight. But I always find a way to win.
Wow.
So I do that throughout camp, throughout, you know, the day, at nights, you know, leading up to a fight even more. The week of the fight, that's all I'm replaying in my head. The day I step inside that ring, nothing to worry about, nothing to surprise me, nothing to scare me, because I've already won the fight many, many times in my head. So nothing is new. Everything is easy for me. So it's just another day in the office for me. So I do that. That's something very big that other fighters don't do. And they may do the run, they may do the road work, they may do the bag, they may do the sparring, but they don't put that in.
Man.
And even the sparring or other physical work that you do, they may not give it their all. They do it, but I've seen the videos of other guys training, and it's like they're just playing, like they're just barely tapping the heavy bag. That's not gonna get you in shape. Or they're sparring lower level opponents. That's not gonna get your reflexes sharp. That's not gonna get you to really pick it up. Because you're basically just playing with kids. That's not gonna help. We push ourselves. We train hard, we run hard. I don't enjoy it. I don't love that part of the sport, but I know it's what's gonna get me to win. I love winning.
I do the show for the last 5 minutes. That's why I do this. It's selfish, like what you just said. Yeah. One of my favorite things I've ever heard on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the mindset and the internal workings of a champion. Like, I'm just, dude, that's like, that's the separate. Because your brain moves towards what it's most familiar with.
Yes.
So if you've run these scenarios through in your head, all of them a whole bunch of times, that always lead in you winning, your brain moves towards that when you're under pressure, when you're fatigued, when you're tired, when you're stressed. There's familiarity. It's almost like, I say this all the time, you play a video game with my son, he's gonna beat me every time because he's telling me how to do it.
Yeah.
He has tons of experience.
He's just doing it.
He's natural, and that's what you're doing when you're in the ring, you're executing. Yeah. I love it. You said that it's just kind of game day, like when you get into the ring.
Easy.
Do you get, when or if ever, are you scared or nervous for a fight in your mind?
I honestly, I've never been scared or nervous.
Hmm.
The moment that I get the butterflies, and it's not even being afraid of the fight, it's not nervousness from the fight or my opponent, but the moment that I get those butterflies is actually the ring walk.
The walk to the ring.
Walk to the ring. When I'm walking out of my dressing room and I'm waiting for the music to go on, and finally you hear the music, you get all the fans to stand up and cheer, and I'm making that walk, that's when I feel a little emotional, a little butterflies. But It's a special feeling. It's something that I appreciate. All those fans took that time from their schedules, from their lives. Maybe they went shopping for that occasion. Maybe they went to dinner early on with their
couple.
I do. Maybe they had their kids, you know, with the babysitter because they made time to come see me. That's so special to me. It's unbelievable that I have people that see me like that.
Yeah.
I'm that big enough or big in their life that they had to make time to come see me. And you're walking out and you see the whole arena filled up. And it's like, all this is for me.
Wow.
That's just, it brings, you know, tears to my eyes sometimes. Like I get
literally on the way to the ring, you have tears.
I'll get, you know, like little tears almost. Like, you know, it's something unbelievable, honestly. I can't explain.
It's almost a spiritual, inspiring
thing.
It's
surreal.
Yeah.
Who am I really?
Yeah.
I don't see myself like anything.
Yeah.
I'm just doing my job. I'm just here getting in the ring like I've done, you know, 38 other times. I'm just doing my job. But for these people that support me, I'm something greater than that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm inspiring them. Maybe I'm motivating them. Maybe, you know, something about me tells them, you got to be there live and see him. And that's when I get those butterflies. I get emotional. I sometimes, like I said, my eyes get a little teary just seeing all that.
I think it's interesting, brother, because first it says what kind of a good person you are, but also like it's a gratitude emotion. So that's another formula for even business people that they have the ability to just feel gratitude in ways that other people don't. So it's interesting to me that you can get it in that moment. Like you're about to go whoop someone's ass in combat, and even in that moment, you kind of step into gratitude. You're just grateful for that walk to the ring. That's another unreal lesson for people to experience gratitude.
Most fighters, before the fight, they're getting in their zone. You know, maybe they're playing a certain music, you know, with headphones or pacing back and forth. You know, they're about to go into battle. So they have to do something like that, or maybe they're praying. Maybe they're being very spiritual. I'm not. Before my fight, I'm like this, just hanging out, just chilling right there, you know, laughing, cracking jokes with my team. Until it's time to warm up, then I start stretching, warming up a little bit, and let's go. But that ring walk is when I feel it, because I see all those people. You know, that's what, you know, triggers that. But then when I step foot inside the ring, it's all gone, down to business. I know what I got to do. I've done it. Nothing new. Let's get this done.
So you're getting instructions face to face. You're there's no fear. Nothing. There's no you're just going to execute. You've already done this 1,000 times in your head.
Exactly.
You also seem to me to be a guy who relies. You said that earlier. We train harder than other guys. We're not just tapping the bag.
True.
We're not playing with these, you know, 19-year-old sparring partners who haven't beaten anybody before. Is part of your preparation give you confidence when you get in the ring?
Others,
do you draw on, like, and have you kind of developed like your recipe, like you and your brother kind of know this is our recipe? Or
look, we go to camp for 10 weeks mm-hmm. for each fight. We increase the workload as the weeks go by. We mm-hmm. have to peak at a certain week, and my brother and my dad do this. They mm-hmm. write up a calendar. They jot down exactly how many rounds we want to do on this day, on that day, and next week, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Once we complete the entire schedule and it's fight week, I know I did everything that was supposed to be done. Mm. That brings me confidence that I'm in the best shape possible.
Okay.
Nothing's gonna stop me. Mm. My sparring partners are bigger, stronger guys than my opponent.
Really?
And they're telling me I'm hurting them. They're letting me know that, you know, I'm stronger than ever, I'm faster than ever. That also reassures my, yep. my abilities. But me, myself, you know, seeing my work, how I'm performing, leaves me no doubt that I'm a win.
Dude, I love that. I think a lot of times in business too, some of you guys that train and lead people, like you need to make your training almost more difficult than the actual interaction would be with the client. That way when they see the client, it's easy,
it's
right?
Easy.
It'll just be harder, more objections, more difficulties with the people that you're training. Don't make your training so damn easy that your people fail in front of the client,
I
right?
was just telling my boy Robert on the way here that, you know, because I do all this visualization, because we work so hard, you know, when I step foot inside the ring, it's easy.
It's
easy because I've done it. It's not new. Mm-hmm. People are only afraid of the unknown. People are afraid of what they don't know. Mm-hmm. People, you know, are afraid when they get out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, because they've never done it. They're not used to it. They don't prepare for it.
Yeah.
They didn't take the right notes. And, you know, they get nervous.
Yeah.
But for me, knowing that I did all the training, all the work, you know, and I've done this so many times, and I've visualized it so many times in my head, and I know I'm a win. What's there to be afraid of? Oh. Nothing. I just go in. I gotta get it done.
Damn, dude, come on, man. This is too good. All right, I want to talk a little business stuff with you too. I'm blown away. I want to talk some business stuff with you real quick. What people don't know, unless they're real boxing fans, is you've also kind of manned up in the business side of boxing too. In other words, you took your career into your own hands at a pretty good sacrifice.
Yes.
And so you had a promoter, we don't need to name him, but you had a promoter that you didn't feel like you had a fair agreement with, or they wanted you to re-sign for the same unfair agreement.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Listen, we had a promoter who I worked with ever since I turned pro mm-hmm. back in 2006. I was with them for 9 years of my career. I was champion 2 times under their banner. Contract came up. They believed that contract had an extension that they could apply.
Mm-hmm.
I disputed that extension. The details, I can go into details if you'd like, if you got time, but short story.
Well, it took a long time.
2.5 years.
So you were not in the ring.
I was not in the ring for 2.5 years.
Well, on the principle of making a fair agreement for yourself. Basically, the way I view it, and I'll jump in, you became an entrepreneur. Almost like an employee before you bet on yourself.
Yeah, I was betting on myself.
Yeah.
I believed in myself. I believed in the principles. I you know, I knew that what the promotional company wanted to do was wrong.
Mm.
They were offering me a fight in exchange for an extension to the contract, which I didn't agree on. I actually offered to renegotiate.
Mm.
They said, no, there already is an extension on the contract.
Mm.
So then my question was, if there already is an extension, why are you asking me to sign another extension?
Yeah, right.
It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
They had the title that I had to be vacated. They stripped me from my title due to the inactivity. So the company, because they were not fighting me, they didn't fight, they didn't give me a fight. I ended up losing my title for inactivity, and I lost 2.5 years of my career. When we finally came out of that whole mess, I was in a much better place. Now I'm in complete control.
Yep.
I started aligning myself with some people in the sport that were being supportive, that were helping.
Mm-hmm.
Network, advisors, promoters, they wanted to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we started, you know, creating this alliance, helping me get my fights, fight by fight, working together, but no commitment with contracts.
Yep.
on one fight deal, fight by fight.
Yep.
No long-term contract unless it made something life-changing for me.
Right.
But still,
right.
Hasn't happened.
You're one of the very few boxers ever to do what you've done. Yeah. Basically became an entrepreneur, basically bet on himself. He probably wouldn't say it, but I think it cost you about seven figures to probably do it.
It did.
Right?
It did.
I mean, it was a tremendous sacrifice to stand on that principle.
It cost me more than that if you consider the money that I basically didn't earn.
Didn't make boxing. Several million dollars.
There. So it was several million dollars that I pretty much lost. Moments that were scary were moments where I still had mortgage, I still had some bills. Mm-hmm. And some of my tenants were late, and I got to make those mortgage payments.
Yep.
And in all honesty, there was moments where I was broke.
Yeah.
As far as cash, liquid cash, I didn't have it.
Yep.
I had to wait for another installment from this, you know, business or from this sponsorship or from my rentals or whatever. Moments where I didn't have more than $300 in my
account.
That's
amazing to me. Wow.
Honestly, okay. no bullshit, no lies.
Wow.
Moments where I didn't have no more than $300 in my account.
My gosh.
And what I do, I go buy groceries instead of making that bill.
Wow.
Instead of paying that mortgage or paying that whatever it was.
So a world champion is in that situation on the principle of it. Wow.
On the principle.
Wow.
And, you know, things.
They were betting on that, weren't they? They were betting you'd cave in.
The technique or strategy that I think they had was exactly that I would cave in, that I would fold and come back and take whatever they offered.
Yeah. Give some people money advice. Like, I know, you know, with all my athletes, I always ask them, you know, how are you doing financially? And I you don't have to get into your personal finance, but you're doing very well now.
Yes.
And you're big on not being in debt and saving money.
Yes.
Do you mind telling them, like, how much being rich compared to looking rich is important to you? You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of guys want to look rich.
Yes.
You want to be rich, right? And so, anytime, if you don't mind, like, what you've done for your kids, look, college stuff, all that.
I've seen a lot of fighters pretend like they're rich.
A lot of people.
You know,
yep.
A lot of people, but yep.
It's more in boxing.
I see it in boxing more.
Yep.
You know, they make $100,000 to go buy a $80,000 Mercedes.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It makes no sense to me.
Right.
But not many people think like me. Mm. Not many people have the experience that I have. Mm. I have seen a lot of fighters. I've seen a lot of cases. My dad has given me a lot of advice. Even though he didn't have the education, but he always, you know, would advise me and tell me to make sure I do well with my money, I save my money, put it away in things that can help me in the future for my retirement, think about the future, think about the kids, that kind of stuff. So when I started making some money, $200,000 fights, $300,000 purses, first thing I started doing is start buying some houses, some real estate, rental income, some flips, stuff like that. That let me get through the 2.5 year, you know, layoff. I was able to make some money on the side like that. Now I'm fortunate to make better money than ever. Yeah. I'm doing very well, making more money than I ever imagined I was making at this, you know, age. Paid off everything that I have.
Awesome.
I have several rental properties, income. Some they were paid for, some had mortgages, and just being paid by the rents.
Yeah.
I'm not making money off of them, but my money's safe.
Yep.
I'm not getting rich off of the $1,000 a month income, but my money's safe there.
Yep.
You know, you have $400,000 in that property, you have another $400,000 there. Mm. So after making good money now, I paid everything off. This last fight, I paid everything off.
Awesome.
Paid all the cars off, paid all the credit card. I honestly don't even use credit cards, but little $10,000 credit card, whatever.
Yep.
You know, paid that off, paid my houses.
Yep.
But even before that, I secured my kids' college accounts. I have college accounts for them. So that's secure. My retirement, I have another account set up for retirement.
I love this.
I'm completely free and clear and basically, you know, financial.
It's the greatest feeling, isn't it?
I was so happy after this last fight.
Yeah.
Because I knew exactly what I was going to do.
Yeah, you knew what you were going
to
do.
So after the last fight, we had my first guaranteed check right away. That comes from the network. We have a check.
Yeah.
Solid.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, I get the other check.
Yeah.
Another week, another check.
Yeah.
And these are all large checks, seven-figure checks.
Yes.
I'm like, fuck yeah.
That's
so I put one aside for taxes.
Yeah, better do
put
that.
Put one aside for taxes.
That's another lesson.
I knew that's not mine, that's taxes, but I still have the other two.
Yeah.
Pay everything off, take care, and I still have all this, you know, deposit.
It's the best feeling in the world. People get advice going different ways. I'm just tell you, just so you all know, this is how rich people think. It's how I think. It's how rich people think. Rich people do not love tons of debt. I don't care. No, you want some debt on some of your real estate? That's okay if it's going to appreciate. But you pay off your cars. You pay off your stuff. You fund the college stuff. And you get excited about saving money. Like, your face lit up about saving the money, not spending the money. The other dudes sit in that seat, their face gets excited about spending the money.
What's the next purchase?
Right. What am I going to buy?
What am I going to buy? And it's okay to treat yourself.
Of course.
But, you know, at your means, know where you stand, what you can afford. I mean, just because you made, like I said, $100,000 in one exchange or transaction doesn't mean you should buy an $80,000 or $100,000 Mercedes.
Thank you.
It's not, it doesn't work like that.
Yep.
You know?
But most people do that.
Most people do that.
Yeah.
You know, and when it comes to boxing, people hear, oh, he made $1 million in the fight and think it's a lot of money. It's not. Let me tell you how this works.
Okay.
$1 million for a fight. That's what's contracted. That's what's the guarantee. You have to pay your manager and your trainer and your expenses, your training camp, all that.
What is that roughly?
Let me tell you.
Okay.
On average, a manager charges about 30%. Mm-hmm. A trainer charges about 10%. So right away, that's 40%. Your camp could be anywhere from, you know, $30,000, $50,000 for training camp.
Okay.
Your conditioning coach, your cook, all that. Add another 10%. So half of your paycheck goes to expenses right away.
Okay.
So from the million, you're down to $500,000. That $500,000, you got to pay your taxes. Easy numbers, say 30%. Mm-hmm. Easy numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an $150,000 that you have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with good CPA and good write-offs.
Yeah.
So now you're down to $350,000.
Yeah.
$350,000 from a million?
Wow.
You buy yourself a house that's $300,000.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
Now what do you have?
Yep.
You got nothing.
Yes.
But most people don't see that, and they go ahead and spend all the money right away.
Mm.
Maybe they don't have the people around them telling them what to do. They've never had the education or the ability to just handle that kind of money.
Mm.
First time getting that kind of money, they go crazy.
Yes.
So I was fortunate enough to listen to my dad.
Thank God.
Just hear him out.
Yeah.
Didn't do those purchases. I'd never bought anything that I didn't know for a fact I could afford it.
Yeah.
I was champion, and I saved my money from two fights to finally buy a newer home.
Yeah.
Before I was champion, I saved money from two fights on HBO appearances. I was making $100,000 in each fight. Mm. I saved my money, I bought one house. Then after the next fight, I bought a Challenger, a car. That was like my thing, my baby.
Okay.
I still have.
Awesome.
But it's not buying,
extravagant stuff.
Yeah. You know, $100,000 Mercedes, not yet.
Yeah.
I bought another house after that, bought another house. You know, I'm buying stuff that I know is gonna help in the future.
Yes.
It really helped during the years that I was off.
Thank God.
Those houses, those rentals helped.
Yep.
Those flips helped.
Yeah. I love how you think.
You know, it was a different process to make it through those 2.5 years.
Yep.
When you're not making, you know, $500,000 a fight, you're not making $300,000 a fight.
Yep.
What do you do? You're living, you know, on a budget
and you were spending money.
You still have to spend money, but you have to do it a certain way.
Yep. And by the way, that happens to everybody, though. Even in every business, there's seasons where entrepreneurs are doing really well, and then they're not. And it's amazing to me when guys don't think they're going to go through a two-year drought.
Yeah.
And you're going to go through a two-year drought if you're a boxer, if you're a businessman, you've got to save money.
You got to prepare yourself for that.
Let's talk about you making more money. So
let's
finish with the future, because by the way, like, there's so many lessons in this. Like, I'm really weird, but as you're talking, like, there's so many clips here. You know, like, there's so much stuff I want to send people, because there's stuff for young athletes, business people, entrepreneurs, mindset, family, immigration. It's like, dude, we covered a lot of stuff here. Money, right? Preparation. There's so much to this. Visualization was huge.
Yeah.
But I you got to fight. You've at least committed to obviously fight this guy, Comey, right? You think that's going to happen?
Richard Comey, he's my mandatory.
Yep.
He's my number one contender for the recently earned IBF belt that I won.
Yep.
I asked his promoter. We talked to his promoter. We have an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fight date yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in search of an Errol Spence fight.
Yeah, that's what people
want
to see.
That's what I want.
Yep.
I really want to again, we'll go back to challenging. You know,
yep.
I want something that's going to challenge me more.
Yep.
So I'm willing to move up to welterweight, a fifth division, a division where I've never even, you know, set foot at, against probably the most dangerous man in that division.
Mm-hmm.
Highest KO ratio in the division. Naturally, the biggest man I've ever stepped, you know, inside the ring with.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to challenge myself that much. That's the fight that really excites me. That's the fight that motivates me. That's the fight that I want. However, at lightweight, the IBF is mandating that I fight my mandatory. So me and
so
the promoter.
So to keep your belt, you'd have to fight him.
I would have to fight him.
Yep.
In order for me to keep the belt, I would have to fight him. So I asked his promoter, Lou DiBella, for me and him to make an agreement where if you just hold off just a little bit, let me see what is going to happen with Errol Spence. If we don't have that fight, then we go on to Kami and we get that fight done ASAP. We already have potential dates for that if it happens. We already have the networks behind us. Okay. It's done. Okay. It's just we have to say yes.
Okay.
But give me a couple of days, a week or two, to see what's going to happen with Errol Spence. If he decides to go Sean Porter and fight Sean Porter and unify, then I'll go to Richard Kami right away. But if I do land the Errol Spence fight, then that's the fight that I'm be most happy for. I just want that.
You can see it on your face.
I just want that.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the fight that puts me on top of the sport.
Yep.
Undoubtedly, no matter what anybody else says, they're all going to agree. I'm the baddest motherfucker in this sport right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see that fight too. Can I ask you about two other guys?
Sure.
Just for what it's worth, I just want to know what you think about them and what those fights would be like. So, by the way, thank you for beating Broner. Just really wanted to see that happen.
Everybody keeps congratulating me for that.
You know why too, right? It's just like, thank you for doing that. I can't even make weight and you just thump him, which was good. So, thank you for doing that.
Sure.
But, so obviously the Spence fight would be huge.
Yes.
But any fight you have is huge because of who you are. You make the fights now. So if you end up fighting Comedy, that's a big fight, right?
Sure.
I mean, everyone wants to see you fight. Still. That's a big thing. We got cheated out of a couple years of watching it. But there's two other dudes. Like, I know I don't want to get too far ahead, but I'll use this footage for when you fight them because you're going to be undefeated anyways, right? So talk to me about Crawford for a second, okay?
He just fought.
He just literally fought this weekend, right?
Saturday.
And so Buck's a bad boy, right? I mean, that's a great fighter. Would that be a dude? Because that's a bigger man also, right?
Yes.
So could that happen someday? If you got through Spence, theoretically, would that be where you'd go?
I think a fight with him would be huge. I've actually considered him pound for pound, number one.
Yeah, people argue, is it you? Is it was it Andre Ward? Is it Floyd? It's not Floyd anymore, obviously. So
You got the top five guys,
and you're in it, right?
You know, some lists are subjective to, you know, whatever. But
it's him. It's the other guy I'm going to ask you about. It's right.
Sure. So I've actually said it was him.
Okay.
He just fought Saturday night. He didn't have, I think, the best performance, but he still did more and better, and he won. He had a little bit of trouble with the height and reach of Benavidez. It's the first time that Crawford fights someone like Benavidez. Prior fighters were not at the level. They're contenders, but not championship, you know, level. They don't have the same skills or attributes. They don't have the height and reach. So that gave him a little bit of trouble. But he was still doing better and winning. And at the end, he caught him with a great uppercut, hurt him, stopped him. If that fight were to ever happen, I think it'd be a huge fight between me and him. We fought once as an amateur. He outpointed me. He outboxed me. I know he's with Top Rank still and ESPN. And I don't know if he's able to break away from them to get a fight with us, or if maybe we can work together and, you know, work something out. But I think that would be a huge fight.
That's a fight you'd do, though.
That's a fight I would definitely do.
So there's Spence. There's Crawford, right? These get me excited. Everybody, if you're a boxing fan, like, you look at the top five lists. It's Mikey, it's Crawford, you know, maybe Alvarez is on there now. I don't know. Triple G was. There's some other dudes in the mix. And then there's one other dude, which would be a totally different fight than Crawford.
Sure.
But could you ever see yourself stepping in there with Lomachenko?
Same thing. Yeah. Again, Top Rank, ESPN issue there. That's what
sucks in boxing, man.
See, right now, I've been working.
People want to see these fights.
I've been working with Showtime. I've been working with PBC, Richard Schaefer, Lou DiBella. Now, I don't have anything signed. I could go to an ESPN, but I don't want to go as an opponent. Going to Top Rank show as the opponent. We deserve a fair, you know, fighting field.
Right.
I deserve my respect just like they do.
Yep.
So we should meet somewhere in the middle.
Correct.
Now, I know the way that promoter runs business, and he doesn't do that. He does everything in-house. So those are tough things to go by and get over and do. But a fight with Lomachenko would be terrific for the fans. I actually think that would be an easier fight for me.
You do.
A tougher fight would be a Crawford fight. Crawford fight would be more
just because
more
stylistically.
Styles. Exactly. Yeah. Height, reach.
Yeah.
Southpaw running around is more difficult than a smaller southpaw that comes and fight.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a terrific fight, though. He has a lot of angles that he's going to try to, you know, enforce and use. I have timing. I got power. I got skills. you know, people underestimate my skills. They see, oh, he's one-dimensional. All he does is a jab, jab, right hand, nothing. Ask that to my opponents. Ask them if they thought it was going to be as difficult as it was. Yeah. Ask them if I hit as hard as they believed. Ask them if I was as fast as they thought.
Yeah.
Ask my opponent. Don't ask me. Don't ask the fan. Ask the opponent.
You know how you seem to me? You seem to me like whatever the fight would need, you would need. Like if you needed additional footwork against a Lomachenko, you'd have it, right? I just feel like that.
Nobody has seen the best out of me. Mm.
That's why I want to see you fight these
guys.
No
one has seen the best because I haven't had the need to use it.
Yeah.
The people that have seen a little bit more are the people that are in the gym with me, training when I'm sparring. Mm. And I mean, I'll invite you if you want
to
come see me
train sometime.
I'm in camp, training, sparring.
Love it, being on here.
A few of the people who have seen me have seen little spurts and moments of me actually picking it up, you know, turning on that switch for those few seconds in sparring against other opponents. Mm. But the general public have never seen those moments because I haven't had the need to.
Yeah.
My opponent brings it, I bring it up a notch. My opponent brings something else, I bring it.
Yeah, that's I'd love to see that with Spence, because I think that fight can be made.
That's one of the ones.
That's the one
that
can be made.
And that can actually be made.
Yeah, exactly.
He's independently working with Al Haymon, he's with PBC, he's working with Showtime.
Yep.
So I want that fight. We actually talked about it, and he was He's down. But after the Danny Garcia-Sean Porter fight, he's saying he wants to maybe do that. Mm. I hope the money maybe is greater with me and draw him back. And
it's such a great time in the sport, man.
Because a lot of money.
There's a lot of money in the sport, and there's so many skilled guys that are different. Like, just the names we've said, like, Spence is this one type of fighter. You're this fundamentally strong dude who does everything well, right?
Yeah.
Then you got this little crazy dude with the footwork and the angles, Lomachenko. And then you got this Crawford dude is just, he's a freak. I mean, he just makes people look silly. They lose their will to win when they fight this guy. He takes their will.
He's very good at using what he has. Height, reach. Mm. He can fight left-handed, right-handed. Mm. He can fight on the inside. He can fight on the outside. For me, that's why I have him as pound for pound, number one.
But hopefully there'll be more and more pressure on like Top Rank and some of these other collaborations to make these fights.
So.
Because that is the one thing you have to say. Because I think boxing is the most beautiful sport. The one thing you can say for the UFC, man, they make the fights people want to see. And your name is associated with the three or four fights everybody wants to see.
In the UFC, he's basically one
of course.
One promoter.
So
he does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
In boxing, there's so much more people involved that it's hard to get all those fights done.
Yep.
We've been able to get a lot of fights through the Showtime and the PBC and Heyman and that group of people, because we have a big roster of fighters where we can still get those fights done. It's really only Aram that does things on his own on the side and really is not working with PBC. Mm-hmm. But there could be some huge fights with Lomachenko, myself, with Crawford with any of the you know, Spence or Thurman fight. There could be so many great fights. Hopefully we can get something
I hope
done.
So too, man. All right, so let's finish up with this. So you we're talking all these fights.
Yeah.
You're kind of this financially independent spot now. You control your own future. What do you want? Like, is one of your goals to surpass the 50-0 mark, or do you not think about those things? You just go one fight at a time. Like, if I said, hey, your career ends in whatever, 6 years, 10 years, 3 years, whatever it is, what do you want to be the finish of that career? What would be your dream career?
You know, I've never actually chased anything. I've never chased a record. Mm. I'm not chasing a number of titles. It's not like I want to get 10 titles or six divisions or five divisions. I've never been chasing that. Mm. I just know that at the end of my career, I'll be regarded and remembered as one of the best fighters of this generation and one of the all-time greats for my accomplishments, for the fights that I'm doing. I know I will. Mm. There's more to prove. There's more to do in the sport. There's more to accomplish, one fight at a time.
And that's how you look at it.
When I'm done, you're just going to see it. Anybody else would think my career is already, you know, set. You know, four divisions, five-time world champion. I mean, anybody else would have been, you know, extremely happy and satisfied with that. I'm not. I just want more.
I love it. And you're young still, bro.
Yeah.
What are you, 30?
I'm 30.
Come on. I mean, you're young.
I'm in my prime.
Dude, it's unbelievable. He's in his prime. And one of the things I think everybody watching this is thinking, too, is like, what a good man. You're confident, but you're humble. And people want to root for you. You know what I mean? And I also think knowing my audience now, they're going to want to follow you too and engage with you. How do they tell them how they find you? Where is the Instagram
social
the best?
Media? Okay. Instagram at Team Mikey Garcia.
Okay.
Mikey Garcia on Twitter. I run my accounts. I'm the one that handles it.
You are.
So I'm on it, you know, and primarily it's on the Instagram, on the Instagram.
I want you to follow him because you got it out of today. This is a world-class businessman. His mindset, he doesn't just think like just an athlete. This guy thinks like a businessman as an athlete. He's a peak performer with all the visualization stuff. That was so good. But I think as you follow him, you're following one of the great American stories. I think every time people see you fight now in my audience, they're going to think of your mom and your dad. Yeah. They're going to think of your brother. They're going to think of you walking into the gym and crying when you were a little kid, you know?
I didn't like it.
You know, and standing up to the promoters. And it's just, you're a real interesting man. I really like you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm really glad we did this today. We're friends now.
Thanks.
I am going to come see you train.
I'll invite you to the gym once I start my training camp.
I'm in.
Come to my ranch, hang out over there. And
I would love that.
To the gym.
And I got to get you up to Idaho with the kids,
we'll do that too.
I would love that. Thanks so much, brother.
Of course, pleasure.
All right, everybody.
Thank you.
This is Mikey Garcia. I know you enjoyed this today. This is what a champion's all about, everybody. I tell you, we bring people who are maxing out their life. By definition, that's what you just heard here today. Want to remind you, every day on Instagram, I do the two-minute drill. When I make a post in my main feed, if you just make a comment in the main feed within the first 2 minutes with a hashtag max out on it, we pick a daily winner. They get my book. They get a coaching call with me. They get gear in the Max Out store. I persuade some of my guests to do a 15-minute call with them, which... Mike will do. We'll do one call, 15 minutes with a winner. And so make sure you're making those comments on there every day. If you miss the first 2 minutes, just if you comment every day, we pick a winner who comments every day anytime. So make sure you're doing the max out 2 minute drill. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Please subscribe if you're watching this or listening to it. Subscribe, spread the word. God bless you, and max out.